Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. Our next guest in the studio is Roger Bridgman of Bridgman Communications. Welcome.
Well, nice to be here. Thank you.
So tell our listeners a little bit. You were telling before we came on the air a little bit about your story, and you've got a long career in the industry, but it didn't start that way.
It didn't start that way. Bridgman Communications, we're a marketing and communications company. We've been in the New England market for 30 years, working primarily with technology firms and B2B companies. And before that, I'd worked with General Electric and a variety of other agencies. And I had come to Boston with a young family about 30 years ago and had worked at a variety of firms, all good experiences, except for the last one where I had came home on a Friday after being fired and had been thinking about starting a firm for a while. And we kind of moped around the house for about 2 days. Not my wife, Marcia. She put a card table down in the basement, strung a telephone. We got ourselves all squared away, and she left to go to work on Monday and said, okay.
Go to it.
Get started. Get started. And we were very fortunate to have a good, large
story.
New England company give us a project right off the bat. And 30 years later, we've been very fortunate.
So obviously, that initial push, so to speak, to get you started was happenstance, but you made the best of it. And what most entrepreneurs do is they take a lousy situation and turn it into a good one. And you probably haven't looked back very many times and say, I wish this didn't happen.
You're right. And in fact, I think for the first 2 or 3 months, I thought, well, I'll see how this goes. And then after about 6 months, and I'd started getting other job offers coming in and going, gee, we're just moderately successful enough that maybe we'll just keep this going. And as all things happen, it's your success is a link of opportunity and a little bit of luck. And my very first large client was Texas Instruments, and out of Dallas. And we got that piece of business because I had worked at General Electric before that, and there were two people down in Texas who worked at GE, Texas Instruments, excuse me. And there was a fellow looking for a PR person in Boston and said, this friend of mine said, you need to talk to Roger. Okay. At the same time, he needed PR representation for the Materials and Controls Group in Attleboro. And he talked to another person who said, oh, unbeknownst, you should talk to this guy, Roger. So Bob Bledsoe calls me up and goes, I don't know who the heck you are, but apparently I'm supposed to be working with you. And that was our first major client.
Great introduction.
We had Texas Instruments for almost 30 years.
So. Oh, wonderful. So a lot has changed over 30 years as far as the industry is concerned. So what are some of the things that you do today that are probably new, and maybe in the digital age it's changed again in the last decade or so, but what are some of the services that you provide to your clients?
It has changed. Our services at this point really focus on helping clients with their messaging strategy, helping them with their communications planning, and then developing content for them, whether that's articles, speeches, thought leadership pieces. I think what's changed dramatically in the market is in the old days, we sort of had public relations and ads, and we had a handful of channels that we would work with. And in those days, communications professionals focused on, I was in PR, I'm in marketing, I'm in direct response. Today, because we have so many channels, and so many of these are self-directed channels, much like our program here today, the challenge is helping companies who are trying to figure out that marketing mix, which of all these pieces to work with. And we get questions all the time. Should I be doing social? Shouldn't I be looking at search engine optimization? Oh, PR is dead. We don't do print advertising anymore. And we're still kind of looking at what are the pockets of things that we do rather than going back to basics, which is why are you doing the things that you want to do? So our role at this point is really helping clients sort of navigate all of those different channels and put together a more of a single consolidated program. And that all starts with taking yet another step back and saying, why are we doing this? What are we trying to do from a go-to-market strategy? Who are your audiences? What are you trying to say? Why does anybody care about what you want to say? And if you can get all of those things done first, then all those little tactical pieces about, well, should I go to this trade show or should I spend money here, those things become self-evident.
So it's interesting how you put it out, because it sounds to me like you know the industry as a large and your firm has gone from perhaps some strategy but a lot of tactical execution to a lot more strategic in terms of figuring out the how, what, why. Before we actually ever execute. And because there's so many other options, the strategic part becomes that much more important. And I think a lot of firms look at it and go, well, there's no cost, you know, or limited cost associated with our ad budget, but the impact is potentially huge. And there's that opportunity cost that
right.
very few people, right. you know, really sit down and think about.
We try not to position ourselves as strategists, because that's a half a step to consultant, which is the mm-hmm. old, gosh, it's going to take you 4 months of planning and money before we do anything for you. So we try to stay away from that. But you're right, there is a much more strategic discipline that's required. It doesn't mean it needs to take a lot of time. It doesn't mean you have to go out and do lots of research and spend money. Strategy can be something as simple as, we want to put out an article on A, B, and C.
Yep.
And strategy tells us, oh, that's fine, but we as a company care about A and B, but our customers care about C, and they really care more about D and E. So before we just sit down and write that piece, and this is a real simple example, let's figure out who we're talking to, why we're talking to them, what we need to say to them, and what do we say to them in terms that are relevant to them.
Right. So you ask the strategic questions and then apply it in terms right. of an execution.
It doesn't have, it's probably our strategy piece, and I want to say strategy and planning, because planning is the next step of what are you doing when, what's the time frame, what's the focus. So all of those things to come together. But strategy can sometimes be as simple as messaging. I mm-hmm. was talking to a company the other day that they're a law firm, and they specialize in immigration law. And when I was meeting with this woman, who's a super smart and wonderful person, we said, what does your company do? She said, we do immigration law. We work with companies and helping them with their visas and immigration and paperwork and legal issues. And I said, well, after talking with her for a while, and she, this is the interesting part too, she knew the answer to this question. We didn't make this up for her, but we were able to facilitate the conversation mm-hmm. where she got to the piece where she understood her business was really helping technology companies in New England acquire international technology and knowledge worker helps to build their companies.
Mm. So
that's totally different.
Totally different than an immigration law.
Right. Yeah. And it's not spin. Mm. It's not some fancy tagline. It helps when she's talking to a customer or a client and they go, what is it you do? One answer could be immigration law. The other speaks to the client's pain point, which is you're probably having problems getting really good technology talent, and you need to mine that in an international way. Hmm. And that's her value to her customers. So strategy can be something that simple. It doesn't have to be a great big long brand study. It can be just, can we just slow down, think about what we're doing, think about what we want to say, and put it in terms that are relevant to somebody else.
So you touched on technology as a sector that you started with.
Correct.
And you've spent quite a bit of time with. But
I would say the majority B2B and technology.
But now you're talking about services and legal services. Are there other niches or particular industry verticals where you focus or you tend to focus?
No, most of it still falls on the technology side. And I would say about 20% of our business is still the B2B side of the equation. We don't really do much on the consumer side because we don't have that expertise. And I like the B2B side, and I like the technology side, because the go-to-market strategies for these companies are usually well-defined. Mm-hmm. And it's not based on, you know, the next rev of some video game or whether you're getting that restaurant is popular or not popular. So we don't tend to do a lot of consumer work. The nice thing about B2B...
There's stability to it as well.
There's stability to it, but also... you know, there's that old expression about, you know, Mr. Wanamaker said, you know, 50 years ago, 50% of my advertising is a waste. I just don't know what 50%. Mm. And so on the consumer side, there's just so much that you can do, and you don't know what's really impacting. On the B2B side of the equation, it's much easier to sit down with someone and say, well, how are you going to market? Oh, well, we're going to introduce a brand new product, or we're going into a new market segment. Well, tell me about the market segment. Well, we're shifting from industrial to residential electrical systems, for example, pretty obscure. And you go, oh, well, you know, who's the buying influencer there? Who actually buys the product? Mm-hmm. And then what do they need to know? And what do you know that has an expertise that would help that person? Then it's a very simple issue to say, oh, we have a public relations opportunity. We should do a webinar. We know exactly the conferences that you ought to go to and the topics that you should speak to. And when you're working in that environment, you can say, we did these three things. They generated 300 leads, 5,000 leads, 50 leads, mm-hmm. three of those converted to business. So it's a much easier channel, and we can justify what we do far better.
And there's a metric a tangible metric that you can take away and show your client what the results have been.
Was it the ad that did it? Was it the PR that did it? Was it social media? What actually drove it?
So you touched on a couple of things earlier. You talked about thought leadership. You talked about speaking engagements, things of that nature. It seems to me that the traditional PR model, which is public, generally publication based.
Yes.
Where the old model was, you had a cadre, if you will. You had relationships with reporters.
Correct.
And you can get, you get them on the phone, so to speak.
Right.
And
who do you know at the Globe or the Times or wherever?
Are those days gone?
Yes. Yes, they are gone.
And so from your perspective as a service provider, has it leveled the playing field some or has it made it more challenging to get the exposure for a client, or is it just there's so many more vehicles available, you just have to pick the right ones?
It's
I know that's a loaded question.
No, the technology, the number of channels available has given us more channels to work with. Okay. If I were to call up somebody at the Boston Globe 10 years ago, say, "Hey, I got a client, let's go have lunch." They would go, "Yeah, okay, maybe a week from Thursday, Raj, nice to, we worked with this reporter before." Today, the Boston Globe's business staff is, 20% of what it was? Mm. They're churning out five pieces, in a shift for Boston.com. They're lucky if they can do an in-depth piece, and they're trying to file stuff as fast as possible. So if I were to call, if that was your job, and I called you up and said, "Hey, you want to have lunch?"
I've got no time.
You've got no time.
Right.
It doesn't
because I've got a deadline that's accelerated. Everything's accelerated.
Everything has accelerated. Mm. However, if I go to you and I say, and this hasn't changed in public relations or in marketing, "Hey, I have a story and I've been reading what you've been doing and I think there's a trend here and I've got an angle on the trend that hasn't been talked about yet. Can I get you some information on that? Can I help you with your story? Can I give you an example of three other companies who aren't my client who are doing something along those lines? And can I then add my client into that mix?" Mm. I've now helped that person. In that regard, it hasn't changed a bit. The skill sets are still the same. What has changed in our market is that because we have so many channels to work with and we need to fill all those channels, and all of these channels are dying for information. Mm. So the trade journals are still there, but now they have blogs. They're looking for contributed pieces. There's still conferences out there that are looking for people to speak. There's still plenty of online channels for people to fill with information that's useful, whether it's thought leadership, some kind of issues or trend piece or just a good, how to do X, Y, and Z kind of piece. The problem for corporations these days, and this is where we come in, is that they need to reach all of those channels, but they can't do those as one-up stories or one-up contributes. Right. They're very expensive. The content is still,
Right, content's king.
Content is still king. Right. So what we've seen is a shift from where we've used to sort of produce one-ups and send that to a lot of different people and get those placements or put those into various channels. Now what we do is we've really shifted into content marketing. And content marketing is really nothing more than saying, again, going back to the strategy, who are you trying to reach? When are you trying to reach them? What are you trying to say? What's believable? All of those things. And say, can we find a topic, an issue, a thought leadership piece, a trend, a how-to that you can own in some ways? Not perhaps uniquely, but you have an expertise to talk about what that might be.
That value-add piece.
What's that value-add piece? Mm. And then we sit down and say, great, let's sort of start that with maybe it's a big article somewhere. Maybe it's a white paper, maybe it's a presentation, but we take the content and we work very hard to sort of get that initial nugget squared away.
And then you build off of that.
Right. So that becomes six blogs and it becomes a couple trade articles and all has to be reworked differently. But the point is for a 2 or 3 month period, you're talking one message. And that has tremendous, tremendous brand value.
Right, and that has staying power and some stickiness associated with it. It's interesting, I think, without being too pessimistic about it, it's amazing how much you read today, and maybe I don't think I'm unique, and you read it and you go, "That was a waste of my time."
Yep.
Yep. And because there's just, the content is so light.
It's absolutely true. The one of the problems we have with new media is we can self-publish. Mm-hmm. So it's my own blog, or I'm buying an ad with a trade journal, so they're going to have to give me that article. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is we've now losing the journalistic filter. The editor would go, That's not a good idea. I need more. There's no there there. Please give me more stuff to work on. And so I miss the editorial pushback because now it's just easy to say whatever it is you want to say.
Right.
So developing keen content right off the bat, something that someone's going to stop and read, is critical. And this is not a new issue. I remember, it must have been 10 years ago, I was on a plane. I picked up the In-Flight magazine, so I'm a captive audience, when they still had magazines, remember? And there was an article, byline article from AT&T or Lucent or one of those folks. The headline was such, I can't remember, but it was like, wow, you've got me. I actually want to read this article from the headline. And I was two paragraphs into it and went, excuse me, this is PR drivel. He's not saying anything.
Right.
You had me. I was interested in the topic.
And you lost me.
I wanted to go through it. And because you were lazy, sorry to use the pejorative, but you didn't say, what does Roger, collectively, want to know about? What you had a chance to say something to me, and you lost that opportunity. And that's where a lot of companies continue to fail. And that's one of the downsides of all this new media and all the channels we have, because you can kind of, quote, put in whatever you want to put into the channel, but someone's still got to read it, someone still has to view it, someone still has to react to it.
Well, the good news within all that is that's why they need you.
That's why we do what we do.
Excellent. Our guest on Radio Entrepreneurs has been Roger Bridgman. Roger, if our listeners want to, Bridgman Communications, I'm sorry, I should mention the name of the company as well. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Easiest way to reach me, and it's so simple, it's roger@bridgman.com. We've had that domain for 25 years, because I had an intern 25 years ago who said, you know, you really like ought to get the Bridgman domain. And I went, I don't know what a domain is.
But it was a good call. I bet you've had engineers and, you know, all types of civil construction companies.
We've had a number of calls over the years, but it's very simple. It's roger@bridgman.com or info@bridgman.com. And we are always delighted to chat with folks.
Excellent. It's been a pleasure having you on, Roger, on Radio Entrepreneurs. And thank you so much for coming in.
Enjoyed it a lot. Thanks again, so very much.
You're welcome. And our guest has been Roger Bridgman of Bridgman Communications. And we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.